Hello, all you reinventors. This is Leslie Jane Seymour, and I am the founder of Covey Club and of this podcast. And I'm so excited to have here today a new person who has jumped headfirst into our area. Joanne Lipman is the best-selling author of Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work. She's a veteran journalist who served as the editor-in-chief of USA Today, USA Today Network, Condé Nast, Portfolio Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, Weekend Journal, and is the author of two other books, including That's What She Said About Closing the Gender Gap. She's somebody I've always admired and have, you know, known in my journalism career. And I'm so ecstatic that she's working in the area of reinvention now. And she has so much research and so much information to pass along to you that I am just going to turn this right over to Joanne. So Joanne, I'm so excited to have you on the show. This is so much fun.
Oh, it's great to be here with you, Leslie.
So let's talk. You are in our wonderful area of reinvention. Let's talk about your own reinvention so that people who don't know you, who are new to this podcast or who are new to you, talk quickly about your own reinvention. What did you start out doing and what are you doing now?
Sure. I love this question because many people look at me and say I've reinvented myself, but I feel like I've been the same person all along, which is a journalist. But I spent several decades as a journalist, 22 years at the Wall Street Journal, then editor-in-chief of a business magazine, Condé Nast Portfolio, editor-in-chief of USA Today and the USA Today Network. So I have a long career as a journalist, but this is also Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work is also my third book. And I also teach journalism at Yale University. So it's funny because people will say that looks like, you know, a totally different career, but to me, it's the same skill set. And as we're going to talk about with Next, I have found this with so many other people with even more extreme pivots to their career because they feel like they're using all their skills in whatever it is that they're transitioning to.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Sometimes it's the, well, I'll tell you what I find sometimes that the way they put it, sometimes it's a question that you're trying to answer that strings all the things through it, whatever your sort of why is. When people ask you what your why is, like my why is helping women have a voice who don't necessarily have a voice on the world and helping them to find the things that will help them move forward. And that can run through publishing. It can run through an entrepreneurial business. Do you have a sense that your why has pushed you through any of those things that are the same?
Yeah, I do. You know, I feel like my why has always been to sort of get to the bottom of questions that all of us are asking. And sometimes what I always try to do is to see around corners, to say, what's happening now, but where is that going to take us? I've spent my career largely working on long-term projects. I created Weekend Journal for the Wall Street Journal and Personal Journal. I created Condé Nast Portfolio, the magazine. And with my books as well, I'm always trying to seek, you know, what are the issues that are percolating now that are going to lead to questions later that we need to answer. And so, yeah, I feel like that has pushed me through every project that I have ever worked on.
I love that. That's fantastic. So let's talk about, in your book, you're talking a lot about, you say it's all about the struggle. And in the struggle, I thought that was interesting. The struggle, that's where we feel the most pain and we feel the most loss sometimes. But that may also be when you're actually growing and you don't know it. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So just to back up for a second, for those who haven't yet read Next, it is a deeply reported guide to navigating change in how we live, how we work, how we parent, how we lead. And I did it by, this actually came out of the pandemic. Speaking of trying to see around corners, right. I realized early on in the pandemic, actually April of 2020, when we all woke up and said, oh my gosh, this pandemic is not like a couple of week thing. This is going to last. And we don't know how long it's going to last. And I thought, you know, we're all going to be searching at some point for whatever this new normal comes out of this. But there was no guidebook to show us the way. And I literally had an aha moment in the middle of the night. And I woke up and I said, oh my gosh, this is not just me and my family and my loved ones. This is all of us. This is a global issue.
It's global this time,
and,
right?
Yeah. And there's no guidebook. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to figure out the guidebook to get us there. And so what I did is I interviewed hundreds of people who had successfully gone through significant transitions, whether we're talking career change or major life change or life-changing aha moments or coming back from failure, all sorts of different significant transitions. And I asked them to walk me through the process of how they got to the other side. And then I spoke to the experts who study the process of change, right? Everyone from psychologists to neuroscientists to management professors.
Correct.
And what I found is they all walked me through, they used different words, but they all walked me through the same four stages that I call the reinvention roadmap. And the four stages are search, struggle, stop, solution. We can talk about all four, but I think the key is the one you hit on, which is the struggle in the middle. And that is because when we tell these stories of reinvention, we tend to think they sort of, they're supposed to happen overnight, right? Because think about, we've grown up with, I call it the Cinderella myth.
Yes. Oh my God. Every right? celebrity that I've interviewed would get on the phone with me and they'd go, you know, this is not overnight sensation. I've been at this for 20 years.
Exactly. Exactly. But we somehow, it is banged into us. I think, you know, we go from the fairy tales
yes, to
Superman and Spider-Man to American Idol. Who wants to be a millionaire? And
yes.
So the culture drills into us that these changes should be abrupt and overnight. And when that doesn't happen for us, we feel like there's something wrong with us. We feel like everybody else is on this glide path to success and only we are struggling. And that's why this struggle stage and shedding light on it is so important so that everyone realizes that, first of all, we all go through it. And secondly, that there's nothing wrong with you. It's actually an important part of the process. And then really, really important piece of this that I found in my research is that you feel like you're stuck. You do feel it's kind of miserable, right? It's very uncomfortable. You feel like you're spinning your wheels. But in fact, all of my research shows you're actually moving forward during that time period. You're just not consciously aware of it.
It's such an interesting, I thought that was really the most interesting insight, because I think that's where people get frightened and they turn away because they think they're just stuck in the mud.
Right.
And if you look at it differently and realize that maybe that sort of, you can't get the car to move, maybe that's actually the learning period and actually where you are moving forward. But, you know, you're going to get that burst of energy. It's all that sort of built up momentum. How do you know that? But we have to be honest, there are some people who are not moving forward. How do you distinguish yourself if you are building that momentum and it's going to explode at the end, or whether you are not getting anywhere? Is there a way to tell?
Yeah. I actually have an entire chapter in next on failure and how to know when to continue versus when to stop. But, you know, a big piece of this actually comes from, you know, going back to the reinvention roadmap, search, struggle, stop, solution. The search, which is this first stage, is when you are collecting information, collecting experiences. What's fascinating about this stage is that for many, many people, you're not doing it consciously or intentionally. It is things that you're collecting, or random interests, a side hustle, a hobby. These are things that you don't necessarily realize are going to lead you ultimately to a transition. But what that means is when you get into the struggle stage, when you're moving ahead, for so many people who successfully make these transitions, they're actually further along than they realized because they've been sort of collecting this information. That said, when you're in that struggle, you know, I have a dozen strategies to help you get through it, which we can talk about. But certainly one of the most important and the, you know, overall is you need to take some sort of action, right? So if you're struggling and you're saying, I might be interested in this different career or this different way, don't just like sit there and cogitate on it. Take action. I mean, I could talk about a couple of different strategies. One is, which I borrow from psychologists, it's social psychologists, is called imagining your possible selves. So this is a step beyond daydreaming. It's not just thinking about, you know, who I want to be. It's imagining what would it like to be in this role? How would I feel? How would others perceive me? And then don't just sit there in your head, but do something about it, right? Like shadow someone, take a course, share your goal with someone, but don't just cogitate. Really, really important to do that. And another thing that people can do, and this is one of my favorite strategies, is to find what I call an expert companion. Now, expert companion is a phrase that I'm actually borrowing from trauma psychologists who say that when they work with trauma survivors, very often to get them to post-traumatic growth, not just stress, but growth to go beyond the trauma, it's very important to talk to an expert companion who can listen and help them interpret what's happening. I think we all need an expert companion, and it is someone who listens to you, who knows you well, who can reflect back to you what are your strengths, your talents, and also your weaknesses. It is someone who has an objective view of you. And the reason that's so important is that it's really hard for us to have an objective view of ourselves, right? And we all have these innate strengths and talents that may be so natural to us that we don't even recognize them. And if we do, we don't take them seriously. So your expert companion is someone who can look at you, Leslie, and say, wow, you have this amazing strength in bringing people together. You have this great strength in empathy. You have, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that can help you focus on what is realistic versus what is not realistic. And I'm going to put out one more about if you're really concerned about failure. This one I love. You can create a CV of failure. This is something that was...
Love that name. Did you say CD or CV?
CV, like curriculum vitae. Like a
oh, resume. Really? Okay, CV. All right. Okay.
A resume of failure. And what that does, I learned about this from a scientist. I met the scientist. She was unbelievably impressive. She has a gold-plated resume, all Ivy League and Oxford and Cambridge and on and on. And then she says to me, but let me walk you through what really happened. And she lists every failure, right? The fellowship she didn't get, the professor who told her she was going to flunk out.
I love that.
Right? Like everything. And what she did is she created the CV of failure for herself, and then she published it in Nature magazine, which is scientists read. And she got this huge response because everybody was like, oh my God, thank you so much. Thank you. I'm not alone. I'm not the only one who failed. But what she said, two things. One is that when you do this, it helps you understand how much you've tried, which is actually encouraging. But I think even more importantly, it actually is a piece of data that you can use to help figure out your next step. So for example, when she put her CV together, she started as a biologist. She realized that all of her failures took place in a laboratory setting, somewhere where she actually had to manipulate things like manipulate fish or animals with her hands. And she realized she was not great with her hands, but what it did make her realize is she was a genius when it came to what's called computational biology. It's not in the laboratory, right? It's computational. And it made her switch her focus. And that is how she became successful, because she realized she was trying to fit into a slot that was really not natural for her. And she had been sort of downplaying something that came much more easily to her, which turned out to be a much better specialty.
Great. I think, yeah, I try to tell people that. I try to tell, you know, various people all the jobs I didn't get, because they look at me and they go, oh, well, look how great you did. It's like, yeah, but I also got, I tried and tried and tried for many things that I didn't get, but you don't see that. I love the CV of failure. That's fantastic. I think that's a good little thing for us to remember. Do you have a sense of how women might pivot differently than men? Do you think that we have any advantages or unique challenges? Are we different in any way, or humans are humans and they have the same struggle?
So all of us will go through this reinvention roadmap probably multiple times in a lifetime, but there is a difference with women. And I have a chapter in Next that I call Necessity Entrepreneurs. And that is, it's women, it's other people who are marginalized. So people of color, the LGBTQ plus community, and by the way, increasingly baby boomers. These are all people who, because baby boomers are aging out past traditional retirement age. And so all of these groups have been marginalized in some ways and pushed off of that sort of mainstream career ladder, or options have foreclosed on them. And so they don't really have any choice but to reinvent themselves. So for women, if you actually look at women's career paths, and there is a professor at Bowling Green State University in Ohio who actually studies this, and she found that women go through this set of career stages very similar to the reinvention roadmap I outlined. And she literally calls the last stage reinvention, because almost all women will end up having to reinvent their careers, which is different than what men go through. So, you know, partly that's necessity, right? It's either the workplace is not cut out for us, it's not flexible enough, or we hit that glass ceiling or the glass cliff where you just, you know, you've reached where you can reach and you're either pushed out or you're not going to go any further. And so women tend to have to reinvent themselves. This is especially true of women of color. So that's a challenge, but there's also an opportunity and a benefit there. And one is, first of all, we are better than at pivoting generally than men are. It comes more easily to us. And part of the reason that that is the case is because of our self-identity. So if you look at the research on self-identity, men are very, very tied. Their identity is tied to their job title. For women, we are also tied to our job titles, but we also have alternate identities. And so when men lose their job and their title, they are at sea. Who am I? When women lose their job and their title, they are more likely to tap into these alternate identities. Oh, well, I'm also a mom. I'm a sister. I'm a daughter. I'm a weekend athlete, whatever that is. And I saw this myself. Actually, I ran a magazine that after the financial crisis closed, and the day that it closed, I remember this, we brought out all the liquor from the various offices, because as you know, as a journalist, there's always liquor in your office somewhere.
We didn't have liquor. What were you guys doing? Maybe we should have. It would have been a lot more fun.
We were a business magazine. There was always liquor around there somewhere.
Hilarious. No, I think we brought out the cupcakes. But go ahead.
So anyway, we're all like in commiserating, right? The men and the women. Interestingly, I had my senior team was evenly divided between men and women. And most of them, men and women, were the primary breadwinners in their homes. And yet the conversation could not have been more different. I mean, the men were all like, I have to get a job right now. And the women were like, oh, I'm going to take off a month and spend it with my kids. Or my mom's been ailing. Now I have a chance to go fly out to visit her. Right. These are the kinds of different. And I noticed it was very, very distinctive, the difference between how men and women spoke. And that is something that as women, it actually protects us and helps us to maintain our sanity and maintain a self-identity, which actually helps us to pivot more easily than men do.
Yeah, we've had a couple of conversations about getting rid of that corporate identity for, you know, it's one of the things that we grabbed onto, I think, accidentally, and took from men that is not helpful. So that when you want to reinvent, you've got to confront that fear of, you know, who am I if I'm no longer a Vogue girl, or I'm no longer, you know, with Bank of America, or no longer this kind of person. It's we've grabbed some of it. But I've heard what you're saying with men, where I hear some men say to me, this is all I know. I know nothing else. I'm just going to have to do this till I die, which is really sad.
It is sad. And, you know, women, we also look, we have the same issue, right? We are very closely tied to that job title as well. It's just that we have a few more outlets. We also generally have more social support than men do. But also, I got the best piece of advice. One of the women who I profile in next is a woman named Jane Veron, who left the paid workforce when her kids were young, and very reluctantly. She loved working. She had an MBA from Harvard. She was really hard charging, but it was just impossible. She had one of those jobs you travel all the time. So for 12 years, she's out of the workforce, very frustrated, feeling invisible. But she used all of that information that she gleaned as a volunteer in a community, in the community and at the schools, to create, when her kids went off to college, she created a nonprofit that helps local business owners by, she gets these volunteers who are moms like herself, stay-at-home moms with business skills. And they tutor local business owners in things like finance and marketing. Jane has this wonderful way of saying to the people, to the point of self-identity, she says, yes, you're volunteers. Yes, you're not getting paid. But don't call yourself a volunteer. You are a professional. You are a consultant, an advisor. And it's really great. The fact is, when you're not getting paid, it doesn't make you less of a professional. And I think that's such a beautiful insight.
And then sometimes with how I've been paid in the beginning stages of publishing, you would go with that as well and say, I was barely paid anyway, but I was a professional.
Exactly.
So I get that. So talk about what you've interviewed, obviously, hundreds of reinventors. And what surprised you the most about them?
You know, I do think what surprised me the most was that almost all of them, even the most extreme pivoters, would tell me that they didn't see themselves as reinventors. They saw that they saw it as organic, you know, a more fuller expression of who they actually are. And I found that fascinating because I talked to people with some pretty extreme reinventions. Like there was a guy who was a JP Morgan, Harvard trained economist for 30 years in London and Manhattan. And today he is a beef cattle farmer in the Hudson Valley.
Love. Like, oh my God. I love it.
I'm like, how in the world that I can't imagine two more different things. But in his case, he, as he said, it started, you know, his search, that first step was he bought a weekend house in the Hudson Valley, a weekend farmhouse. And over many years of weekends, he just got drawn in and fascinated by farming and ultimately made this pivot to full-time farmer himself. But what he said to me is he didn't see it as a reinvention because he said, I use the same set of skills. He said, I'm an economist by training. I'm running a small business here. I need to know about, you know, I've got to get my budgets and my financing and the supply chain and all of the things that that came into play for me as an economist. I still use them, only it's even better because I get to do it soup to nuts. I used to be a cog in a wheel in a giant organization, and now the whole organization is mine, and I get to use even more fully the skills that I've gained all these years. And I thought that was an amazing insight. Same thing. One of my other favorite people is a guy named Chris Donovan, who was a telephone repairman for decades, came from a working class family in Boston where you don't have a career, you have a job and you need job security. And he started at the phone company when he's a teenager and he stayed. But he had this hobby of drawing women's shoes, like these very architectural detailed drawings, which he just thought of as a hobby that he did not share with anyone. Until like he was in his 30s, and then his now husband, he finally showed his pictures to someone else, and his now husband said to him, you know, you have actual serious design talent, like true design talent. And, you know, he went through that struggle period for many years of saying, wait, I need a job, I need a paycheck, but this is not a real career, but it's my passion. And finally, when he was 50 years old, he was stricken with prostate cancer. That was his stop moment. And it made him realize life is too short. He recuperated And he took early retirement from the phone company, and his husband, they've been scraping and saving to renovate the kitchen. His husband gave him the kitchen money and said, go back to school, go to design school. And he did.
Wow.
And today he's a shoe designer, a women's shoe designer. Chris Donovan Shoes, check him out.
Fabulous.
What's so cool about Chris, speaking of like this idea of pivoting, it seems so extreme, but he uses everything that he learned in the phone company. So his designs, he has used like phone, industrial little parts within his designs. He gets inspiration. He said, anybody can get inspiration from a flower or a tree. I go to junkyards. And he said, I'm true to myself, to who I am and who I've always been. And as a result, his designs are truly distinctive. They're beautiful, they're architectural, but they're very distinctive because he puts his whole self and his whole history into them.
I love it. Incredible. What would you say frightened them the most? Was it having to make money?
Yeah, I do think that there's a huge issue. There's a certain amount of privilege that is required for you to make a pivot. So in Chris's case, Chris Donovan, the shoe designer, he was named Best New Shoe Designer by Boston Magazine, and they called him fashion's newest superstar, and he was 62 years old. So he made his life's work, but you know what? He took many, many, many years because he needed the financial security. And that is something that is true, that you do need to have a certain amount of security. However, what I always tell people and what I learned from all the people I interviewed is that they essentially started moving before they moved. In other words, they didn't just say, tomorrow I'm going to be a cattle farmer, I will quit my job today. They slowly moved in, and that's that first step, that search. They started accumulating knowledge, wisdom, experience before they made a move. So they were farther along by the, they were further along before they even decided consciously that they were going to make a move. And I think that is really, really important that you don't quit your job today and say, I'm going to be an astronaut tomorrow, right? You
Yeah, I
need.
try. Yeah, that's what I try to do with people. I say, you always need to have a reinvention plan in your back pocket because you don't know. You could be part of, the banks that are here on Friday and then going out of business on Monday. It may
That's
not
right.
have anything to do with you. And the
Right.
way that things move today and the speed at which they move, that you should always have something and have a small amount of savings. I like to say a year worth of savings in case something happens. And then if you don't have to pivot, go buy yourself a car or something like
I
that.
agree with that completely. I also, the other thing that I found with so many of the people I spoke with is I think it's so important to be open to the unexpected. So many people pivoted in ways that they had no idea. Like, the economist said, there is no way in the world that I ever set out as a young person to say, someday I want to be a cattle farmer. Like he's, that would be foolish. Like that was not, but he was open enough to the idea. And there's actually quite a bit of research that shows that people who have these life-changing aha moments, whether it's to end a toxic relationship, or to switch a career or to break a bad habit. When researchers ask them what was the most important element in these life-changing aha moments that led them to take action, they all said, because I was open to it, because I didn't just discount it or shrug it off, which so many of us are wont to do that, right? That we'll just say, yeah, I don't know. But they were open to the idea of pivoting in an unexpected way.
Well, yeah, I had somebody explain it to me, and I don't remember who said it, but they said, you have to keep your mind open to see all the incredible reinvention opportunities that throw themselves in front of you every day.
Yes. And you have skills that are transferable. No matter where you are, you're going to have skills that are transferable either from your current job or just from things in the rest of your life that you can bring into other, to pivot in other ways.
So I was going to ask you, what is the one characteristic that held true for all the people who were successful? Is the open mind the thing, or is there something else?
I do think that the open mind is huge, but I would also say that virtually everyone, that move before you move, that is the other thing. I don't think I spoke to anyone who successfully pivoted, who just dropped everything and made an extreme pivot that had nothing to do with their previous life. I guess that would be the other thing they all had in common, even the ones that seemed very, very extreme and very different, that
planning.
It wasn't just planning. It was organic, right? It was organic. And I think when we hear reinvention, some people say, oh, you know, in my dreams, I was always going to be blank, right? I was going to be something else.
Right.
I was going to be a ballerina.
Ballerina, I was just going to say, me too, right? Until I figured out I had two left feet, right?
Me too, you and me both. But yes, for all of these people that, like I said, their pivots, even the extreme ones, it's to them, it seemed organic. And I've had this question from younger people who say, you know, what if I'm pivoting and my resume just looks like I'm all over the place? And my answer is, there needs to be a through line. And it's exactly what you were talking about.
The why.
The beginning, the why. Like, what is your through line that takes you from economist to cattle farmer,
right?
You know, phone repairman to shoe designer? What is your through line? And that everybody has this through line.
Yep.
The why.
Yep. You have to get to it. You have to figure it out. But everybody does have it. We all have a motivation. Joanne, where can everybody find the book and where can they find you if they want to follow you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can buy Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work, wherever books are sold, certainly on Amazon or anywhere else. I always love it when people support their independent bookstores.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And it could be somebody's reinvention.
Exactly. Exactly. And you can find me and contact me and find more information at joannelittman.com. joannelittman1word.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Joanne. I'm so glad you did this book and I'm so glad that we had a chance to speak with you.
Likewise, thank you so much, Leslie, and congrats to you on the amazing work that you are doing.
So thank you, Joanne, for joining us. And thank you all for listening. I hope this was really helpful to you. Run out and buy the book. It has so many ideas for you. What I love about Joanne is she grew up like me, learning that we have to make sure that you take something away from your time with us. It's called, what's in it for me? That's what we used to say when we were doing publishing. What's in it for the consumer? And she's obviously thought that through and come up with tons of stuff that's in it for you. So you're going to find all kinds of help, ideas, and inspiration there. So buy the book. And if you're looking for more reinvention advice or more reinvention help, wander over to CoveyClub.com. That's where we have tons of essays, articles, downloads, everything about the reinvention process. You will find yourself in the stories. You will find the kind of help you're looking for. And if you're really serious about reinventing, it's what Joanne said, that you need to have somebody there with you. And that's kind of what we do at Covey Club, is we surround you with like-minded women who are very accomplished, but are in transition and are trying to figure out what's next. And we all help each other with it. And as you may know, that's why I created Covey Club, because it's really hard to do this all by yourself. And I was all alone having to do it when they closed More Magazine, and it was not fun. So anyway, mosey on over to CoveyClub.com. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a review and some stars on Apple Podcasts. That really helps other people find us. So we'll see you next time.